Chapter 28. East and West. Ekon was counting again. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. He sat before a fire, beneath the stars, watching the glittering fragments of its red-gold flames leap and dance against the night sky. It had been an hour since he'd moved, and in his mind, he only saw one face. Not nine, not six, not three. Just one. Kofi. Even now, his heart still raced with a palpable fear when he remembered what she'd done, what she'd looked like as she'd faced down Fedu. He'd seen a new kind of anger in her eyes, a hate. He'd watched the glowing spears form in her hand, watched as she'd thrown them with an eerie delight. In that moment, Kofi hadn't looked like herself at all. She'd looked like someone else. Something else. He cast an involuntary glance over his shoulder at a tent the members of the Enterprise had set up a few feet away. The Raja healers had been running in and out of it from the moment he'd brought Kofi, unconscious, there. But she hadn't woken up. New fear roiled in Ekon's gut. What if she didn't wake up? No, he wouldn't let himself consider that. Kofi had to wake up. She would. And when she did, they would figure out what to do next. His eyes cast around the fields surrounding them. Camp looked different now. He counted 30 in their group now, a mix of Enterprise members and Darashas. The differences between the two groups were stark. Most of the Darajas were still clustered together, eyes wide, as they seemed to be trying to find their bearings. They'd have to figure out what to do with them, too. He tapped his fingers against his knee. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. At the sound of footsteps, he looked up, hopeful, then tensed, as a shadow fell over him. Zane. The boy eased onto an adjacent log, slightly close for Ekon's personal comfort, but he said nothing. After a moment, Ekon broke the silence. How's she doing? He didn't need to say her name. Nothing new, said Zane. She's still unconscious. They don't know what's wrong with her. Ekon made himself count, and he made himself breathe. 1, 2, 3. For every problem, there was a solution. This would be no different. So what now? Ekon asked, gesturing. Where are you and the other Darajas going to go from here? I can't speak for them, said Zane. They're all free to go wherever they want from here. But I want to stay with Kofi. The bonding is getting closer. He gave Ekon a meaningful look, and she still needs to go to the Kusanga Plains and deposit it before then. Ekon nodded. Before she was captured and brought here, we'd had a similar plan. Zane looked over his shoulder at the tent that held Kofi and the healers. If Kofi wakes up, when she wakes up. Ekon barely kept the hostility from his voice. Zane offered an insufferably patient look. When Kofi wakes up, we'll need to move out quickly. We can't stay here. In the midst of the fear, the anxiety, and the fatigue, a new hint of anger touched Ekon as Zane's words sank in. He stared, incredulous. You can't be serious. We just left the mist, and Kofi's hurt. She needs time to recover. Yeah, and you know who won't wait? Zane's eyes flashed. Fedu. She dealt him a good blow, but he's a god, and he won't be incapacitated forever. As soon as he's able, he'll come after us. All of us. We can't let him have Kofi. Ekon stared at the ground for a long while, before speaking again. Fedu was able to travel from Lycosa to Thornkeep in seconds, he said, more to himself than to Zane. There's no way we can hide from him. Zane shook his head. We have gifted Dirajas among us who can help keep our group hidden for a little while. It's not a permanent solution, but if we're lucky, we can last long enough to get to the Kusanga Plains. Ekon was quiet, still counting on his fingers. And what happens if we can't move fast enough? Zane took a deep breath. From what Kofi told me, Adia held on to the splendor for nearly a century, and by consequence, it disfigured her, turned her into a monster. Kofi is stronger than Adia, but what she's doing still takes a tremendous amount of strength. If she can't sustain that self-control, we may have to consider other options. Every muscle in Ekon's body went rigid. What exactly are you saying? Zane turned slowly and met his gaze. I'm saying that Kofi is like a ticking bomb, Ekon. It's not a matter of if she'll explode, but when. If she has the choice herself. No. Ekon shook his head. You can't be serious. Lower your voice, Zane said. There was a new frost in his words. It's not safe for anyone else to hear this. Ekon bit down hard on the inside of his cheek, considering a moment. You can't mean what I think you mean. He forced himself to keep the words to a whisper. Tell me you're not saying that Kofi has to die or sacrifice herself. If she can't hold on to the splendor in time for the bonding ceremony, that may be what happens. Zane's tone was flat, matter of fact. She's not a martyr, said Ekon through his teeth, or some weapon to be used and discarded. One of Zane's brows rose. You're right. She's not a weapon, he said. She's the weapon. One Fedu has made it clear he will happily deploy. And if you think Kofi wouldn't be saying the exact same thing if she was conscious, maybe you don't know her as well as you thought. He left without another word. Ekon started to shake. Because he was tired, because he was hungry, because Kofi was in a tent a few feet away, and he didn't know if she would live. But mostly because of what Zane had said. The words echoed in his mind over and over, like a snake's low hiss. Maybe you don't know her as well as you thought. Ekon. For the second time, he looked up, fists clenched and ready for a second round with Zane. This time, though, it was Ano, staring down at him. She looked tentative. May I sit? Her face was obscured, but her voice was soft. Go ahead. For several long minutes, neither of them spoke as they stared into the flames. Ekon broke their shared silence first. You follow Temba and me. Ano nodded. We knew almost as soon as you left us that we'd made a mistake. We took a vote, and then we came. She looked around them, her face somber. Temba is not with you anymore. She died. Ekon said the words more harshly than he meant to. In the Mistwood. For several long seconds, Ano said nothing. I'm sorry. She was an exceptional woman, and I know she cared for you. She did. There was a bitterness in Ekon's voice. But you didn't. Shock registered in Ano's face. What? I want to know the real reason, said Ekon. I want to know why you agreed to come here, to come after us. You made it clear that you never wanted me to travel with you, and now I'm supposed to believe that you had a change of heart? He shook his head. I don't believe it, and I want to know the truth. There was a long pause. When Anno spoke again, her voice was thick. We came back, she said slowly, because I couldn't let anything happen to you. I couldn't abandon you again. Again? Ekon stiffened. What are you talking about? You asked for the truth, Ekon, she murmured. And you deserve it. She sighed. The first truth is that my name is not Anno. Ekon stilled. My name is Aisha Ndidi Okojo. I am your mother.
No.
Even as he said the word, he knew that what she had said was true. It had been 13 years, but the longer he stared at Anno's face, the more certain he was now. The short black hair he remembered was different. There were faint lines in places where there had not been any before, but it was her. Mama, I'm sorry. She wrapped her arms around herself, and Ekon was struck by how small she looked, how frail. I'm so, so sorry, she repeated. But you have to believe I never wanted to leave you. In the midst of the shock, it took a moment for the anger to come. But then Ekon felt it. It was a great, constricting thing, filling all the space between his ribs. He tried to find the words, the cruel words, the desperate words, to explain the emotions coursing through his body. He found he could only muster 3. We needed you. His voice cracked on the last word. Kamau and I. After Baba died, they tried to... They were going to split us up, send us away. I was trying to protect you, she said. I swear it. If I knew of another way, protect me from what? Finally, Ekon erupted. He'd repressed all of it, the anger, the grief, the hurt, for 13 years. Now, he had no strength left. What was possibly dangerous enough to leave us? Anno lowered her head. East and west. Ekon froze. What? You wouldn't remember it, she said. She was still staring at the ground. The night I brought you to Sigiri.
Sigiri?
Ekon felt a chill as he remembered something. A man leaving the apothecary, a friend of Temba's, a Daraja.
Why did you go to see Sigiri?
His voice sounded hoarse even to his own ears, choked.
I did not intend to do it, said Anno. I was planning to take you to a midwife. You were crying incessantly, and I thought it might be colic. Your brother had had the same affliction. I took you to the woman who treated him. But when I went to her, she told me there was someone else waiting for me, a man who already knew my name, though we'd never met before. Her eyes turned distant, then she closed them and shuddered. That night, I met Sigiri for the first time, and he told me that he could see into the future. He relayed to me a prophecy. East and west. One sun rises in the east. One sun rises in the west. One sun sees only triumph. One sun sees only death. Ekon shook his head.
I don't understand. That's talking about 2 different suns rising. It has nothing to do with...
You do not speak the language of prophecy, said Anno. Her smile was sad. You are too literal. The suns mentioned in that line do not refer to suns in the sky, but male children. Suns. One sun rises in the east. One sun rises in the west. It is a reference to you and to your brother.
But,
Akon frowned.
No, that still doesn't make sense. Kamau and I were both born in the Zamani region in the east.
Too literal again, said Anno, shaking her head. Kamau was born in the morning when the sun rose in the east. Her eyes grew somber. But you, I labored with you for nearly a day, from sunrise to sundown. By the time I'd delivered you, it was dusk, and the sun was in the west.
Ekon said nothing, as a lump rose in his throat, as a fear he'd never felt before gripped him.
What else did Sekiti's prophecy say?
Anno stared at Ekon a long time before she spoke again. One sun rises in the east. One sun rises in the west. One sun will know glory. One sun will know death.
She paused, visibly hesitant.
I asked Sigidi if he could tell me anything else about the prophecy, anything else that might help me understand. He only told me that, in the end, one of my sons would grow up and kill that which he loves most.
She shook her head.
I was vain. I thought perhaps it might mean that one of you would kill me.
So I left. But now,
she trailed off.
I see the way you look at her.
Her?
Ekon started. Anno said nothing, but looked purposefully to her right. Ekon followed her gaze. Together, they stared at the tent where Kofi lay.